In June 1776, the Committee of Five was appointed by the Continental Congress to write the United States Declaration of Independence. The committee consisted of Benjamin Franklin, Thomas Jefferson, Robert Livingston, Roger Sherman, and John Adams. Historians estimate Thomas Jefferson wrote about 80% of the Declaration of Independence, and he is depicted in this famous painting presenting the Declaration to John Hancock. John Hancock was the president of the Continental Congress and the first of the 56 signers to pledge their lives, fortunes, and sacred honor in support of the Declaration of Independence. This Saturday, Americans will celebrate the 250th anniversary of the signing of the Declaration of Independence, which is functionally America's birth certificate. While flock cameras and massive AI data centers didn't exist in 1776, the principles espoused in the Declaration of Independence speak directly to many of the questions those technologies raise today. In this video, we will examine those foundational principles as they apply to the rapidly expanding AI-powered surveillance infrastructure that is turning our country into an open-air prison. And if you think that statement is an exaggeration, just listen to how unofficial flock spokesman Sergeant Jamie Milliman describes flock cameras.
You know we have cameras in that town and you can't get a breath of fresh air in or out of that place without us knowing, correct?
You can't get a breath of fresh air without us knowing. Sergeant Milliman isn't describing safe streets. He's describing a prison exercise yard. Two quick announcements before we continue. On Wednesday, July 15th, I will be teaming up again with Gabriel and Urban from EscapeTheTechnocracy.com to bring you a live 3-hour webinar on how to use AI tools in a privacy-focused way to enhance your skills and productivity. There are some very cool and legitimate things you can do with AI, and some things you should never do with AI. At the end of this video, I have included a short discussion with Gabriel and Urban about what this webinar will cover. Second, if you enjoy my videos and want to help support my work, please consider joining my Patreon community, where I post polls and solicit your ideas on various topics, and where I share a lot of behind-the-scenes information and content I don't post on YouTube. The opening paragraph of the Declaration of Independence makes it clear the signers believed, as do I, that human beings have rights that come from, quote, the laws of nature and of nature's God. In other words, governments do not give us our rights. They are supposed to protect the rights we already have. This theme is expanded upon in the preamble. Many people can quote the first few lines of the preamble to the Declaration of Independence. It begins with a beautiful and eloquent line, "We hold these truths to be self-evident." While Jefferson wrote most of the Declaration, it was Dr. Benjamin Franklin who suggested the use of the mathematical term self-evident to describe the truths that follow. Self-evident means that it is so obvious, no additional explanation is needed. For instance, if A equals B, it is self-evident that B equals A. No further explanation is necessary. What are the self-evident truths upon which America was founded? That all men are created equal. Intellectual honesty demands that I acknowledge the elephant in the room regarding this self-evident truth. Many of the signers of the Declaration of Independence owned slaves. In other words, some of the men who supported the Declaration failed to live up to one of its fundamental principles. But failure of men to live up to a principle does not invalidate the principle. The second self-evident truth is that we are endowed by our Creator with certain unalienable rights. Our founders believed our rights came from God, not government. This is crucial to understand. Unalienable rights, or inalienable rights as we would say today, means rights that cannot be separated from us or taken away by men because they were not bestowed to us by men. However, those rights may be violated by men, and that is why we need an entity stronger than an individual to protect those unalienable rights. That among our unalienable rights are the right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. It doesn't say we have a right to happiness or that anyone owes us happiness, just that we have a right to pursue happiness. It also does not say these are our only unalienable rights. It says among our unalienable rights are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. But that implies there are others that were not specifically listed here. The third self-evident truth is that to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men. The purpose of government is to protect our unalienable, God-given rights. 12 years later, when Virginia was debating whether to ratify the U.S. Constitution, Patrick Henry famously said, "You are not to inquire how your trade may be increased, nor how you are to become a great and powerful people, but how your liberties can be secured, for liberty ought to be the direct end of your government." The very next day, as Virginia continued to debate on whether to ratify the U.S. Constitution and join the Union of States, Patrick Henry gave this warning: "Guard with jealous attention the public liberty. Suspect everyone who approaches that jewel. Unfortunately, nothing will preserve it but downright force. Whenever you give up that force, you are inevitably ruined." The third self-evident truth continues by stating government that was instituted to secure our rights derives its just powers from the consent of the governed. Let me say that again. That to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed. If just powers come from the consent of the governed, then any government power exercised without the consent of the governed is by definition unjust. We will talk a lot more about consent, and especially the lack of consent, later in this video. The fourth self-evident truth, according to America's birth certificate, is that whenever any form of government becomes destructive to these ends, it is the right of the people to alter or abolish it, and to institute new government, laying its foundation on such principles and organizing its power in such form as to them shall seem most likely to affect their safety and happiness. I want to be perfectly clear about this. When the 56 signers of the Declaration of Independence pledged their lives, fortune, and sacred honor in support of these principles, they were announcing a revolt against the British government. I am not calling for a revolt. I am calling for a restoration, a return to the principles espoused in America's founding documents, because the United States government and many state governments have drifted so far away from these principles that most people, including far too many in elected office, don't even recognize them as founding principles. The fifth self-evident truth is that governments long established should not be changed for, quote, light and transient causes. In other words, you don't alter or abolish a 250-year-old government just because you don't like some recent policy or program decision or some political appointee who lies under oath or who has been photographed on a certain infamous island. The fifth self-evident truth continues by stating, all experience has shown people are inclined to suffer evil while evils are sufferable instead of doing the hard work of abolishing the forms of government to which they are accustomed. The sixth and final self-evident truth in the preamble tells us there is a point beyond which people have more than just a right to alter or abolish their government. What is that point? When a long train of abuses and usurpations, pursuing invariably the same object, evinces a design to reduce them under absolute despotism. Before I finish reading that sixth self-evident truth, I want to clarify a couple of words because we don't use them much in everyday conversation. What is an abuse in the context of government action? One could argue sending 40 heavily armed FBI agents in full military gear with drones and an armored vehicle in a pre-dawn raid to arrest an American citizen with no criminal record for writing financial privacy software, that would count as an abuse. I recently interviewed Lauren Rodriguez about the day that happened to her and her husband, and I will link that video at the end of this one. But what is a usurpation? Merriam-Webster defines a usurpation as, quote, unauthorized, arbitrary assumption and exercise of power, especially as infringing on others' rights. That sounds to me like what happens when a government operates against the consent of the governed and becomes destructive to the unalienable rights they were instituted to protect. And what does despotism mean? Again, going to Merriam-Webster, despotism means an oppressive absolute power and authority exerted by government. Let's do a quick thought experiment. Imagine a country where the government tracks and keeps a database of everywhere the governed fly and everywhere the governed drive, and everything the governed purchase with their credit cards, and records in a database every electronic device the governed carry on their body or in their vehicle, so they can be identified by their AirPods, Fitbit, or hearing aids, even if they have their face covered or they are riding in someone else's vehicle. And imagine if that government kept a database of everyone's social media post and used a database with more than 30 billion facial images in it so they could identify everyone walking down a street or attending a protest. Imagine that government was doing all those things and more without the consent or even the knowledge of the governed. What government would most people think I was describing? Certainly not the land of the free and the home of the brave. What did the signers of the Declaration of Independence say the people should do in response to a long train of abuses and usurpations? According to the 56 men who pledged their lives, fortune, and sacred honor to establish the United States of America, quote, it is their right, it is their duty, to throw off such government and provide new guards for their future security. I want to stress again, I am not saying that we are at that point yet, and I am not calling for people to revolt or to vandalize flock surveillance cameras and AI-powered surveillance microphones. Just the opposite. I am wanting to prevent that by peacefully calling for the restoration of our founding principles. The idea that the purpose of government is to secure our rights, not to ensure they have a database of everywhere we go, every time we leave our home, who we are with, what we buy, what we read, what we watch or talk about online. Now, let's return to the concept of the consent of the governed, the source of the just powers of government. There was never a public debate before over 109,000 license plate readers were installed from sea to shining sea to track everywhere the governed drive. The 1,034 known license plate readers in the Atlanta area look like a surveillance virus rapidly spreading across North America. I realize in a constitutional republic, we elect people to represent us, but I have never heard of a single mayor, sheriff, or city or county council member who ran for office on a platform of, elect me and I will spend your tax dollars to install dozens or hundreds of license plate readers to track you everywhere you go. They didn't tell us they were going to spend our tax dollars on these cameras, and for the most part, they never asked us if we wanted them. Early on, these cameras were going up with little to no public input, but as this invasive species spread unchecked, people started pushing back. People on the left, right, and center started working together to express their opposition to these cameras, because the vast majority of people don't like being surveilled 24/7. In just the past 9 months, 53 communities have either voted against installing flock cameras or voted to cancel flock contracts, and the pace of anti-flock victories is accelerating. Some elected officials initially voted against the consent of the governed, such as the Montlake Terrace City Council, who approved flock cameras in June 2025. Then just 6 months later voted to cancel their flock contract. Then there is Venice Williams, the president of the Toledo City Council, who announced this month that she is very supportive of flock and said, quote, we've had it for 20 years. I just have one question for Councilwoman Williams. Can I borrow your DeLorean? That is the only explanation I can think of to explain how Toledo has had flock cameras for 20 years when flock didn't even exist until just 9 years ago. But voting against the consent of the governed has risen to a whole new level when it comes to AI data centers. When a massive data center was proposed in Festus, Missouri, Local residents created a Facebook page and website to oppose it. They put up yard signs against it, and opponents of the project, quote, packed a high school gymnasium. Quote, Festa City Council limited public comment to 2 hours, filled entirely of passionate opposition, before voting to pass an ordinance 6-2. One resident pointed out, quote, every meeting I've attended, there have been 80-90% opposition. The other 10% are mostly people who don't live here. The city council demonstrated they had no problem voting against the consent of the governed. 2 weeks later, the governed fired every city council member who was up for re-election in 2026. The governed then launched recall petitions against the mayor and remaining members of the city council who were not on the April 2026 ballot. In a turn of events that shocked absolutely no one, the mayor and city council voted against removing themselves from office, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed. The incident in Festus reminds me of another data center fight in Utah, where Kevin O'Leary is trying to cram a $100 billion data center down the throats of Utah residents. The 40,000-acre project, when completed, will use 9 gigawatts of power, which is more than double the entire electricity consumption of the whole state of Utah today. It is also estimated to use between 500,000 and 1 million gallons of water per day, which will create some interesting environmental issues in a state that's not really known for its scenic coastline. But my favorite part of this story is Kevin O'Leary's claim that the opposition to his data center is being funded by foreign money. For those of you who don't know, Kevin O'Leary's citizenships, plural, are Canada, Ireland, and United Arab Emirates. Mr. Pot, meet Mr. Kettle. My hope, prayers, and concerted efforts are all focused on the idea of restoring America to its founding principles, where government's purpose is to protect our rights, and government rules with the consent of the governed, not against the consent of the governed. I don't want a revolt. I want a restoration. I don't want vandalism. I want legislative and judicial victory. The idea of winning those victories by uniting people across the political spectrum to push back against government overreach and warrantless surveillance fills me with optimism. But what do you think? If you want me to do more educational videos on America's founding documents and principles, please let me know. I always mean it when I say I can't wait to read your comments, but that goes double for this video. In just a moment, I will play the recording of my discussion with Urban and Gabriel regarding our upcoming live AI webinar on Wednesday, July 15th. This summer, I am continuing my free live events on my Brush Fires of Freedom tour. I will be speaking in 19 cities across 16 states. Visit brushfirestour.com for more details. Also, be sure to check out my affiliate links for discounts on privacy-related products and services, and join me for Office Hours, my live stream on the first and third Monday of each month at 7 p.m. Eastern. I'd like to welcome Gabriel and Urban back to Business Reform. We are going to be hosting a 3-hour live webinar about AI and how to use AI in a privacy-focused manner to increase your capabilities and your productivity. And I'm going to turn this over to Gabriel and Urban and let them talk you through some of the things that they're going to be sharing in that webinar.
Yeah, absolutely.
Gabriel, go right ahead.
Thank you, John. Glad to be back with your audience. So yeah, the link is ett.live, as it was before, and this is the AI Productivity and Mastery course. I'm sure John will also have a link for you to get there directly in the show notes. And yeah, we're very pleased to be collaborating with you again. This is our second time. Our first webinar was on general privacy strategies. We got to experience a lot of your excellent audience, and that was fantastic. So we're really excited to be coming again. And basically, as you said, this is an AI-focused webinar, and there's a lot of talk about AI right now. So we have been in AI for a long time, since the beginning, right? I still remember when Urban gave me a PhD-level explanation of how these large language models were trained. And we've been using it in our business. We've been helping other people use it. And we have mastered a lot of these tools. And so what we're showing off in this class is essentially how to use the basics of AI. So we'll start with the text-focused AI. We'll get you up and running with that, including some really interesting creative ways of using it. We're going to get into the art-focused AI. We'll cover things like video, audio, and some of the latest technologies. We'll touch a little bit on self-hosting. That won't be the focus of this course, but we'll touch a little bit on self-hosting. And the things that really make us stand out, as your audience knows by now, John, is that we're anti-technocratic. So our brand is Escape the Technocracy. So we focus on privacy always. Now, that doesn't mean we're not going to show you some of the big tools, the ChatGPTs, what those are capable of, but we're going to show you maybe how to use those in a way that is preserving your anonymity a little bit more. And we're certainly going to be showing some privacy alternatives. When you have companies like ChatGPT, who has hired a former head of the NSA onto its board, you understand that there's serious risk to using these big tech AI tools. So we're certainly going to walk you through all of the reasons why you might want to use or not use those tools and how to use them in an alternative way. We don't have any sponsors ourselves. So of course, we're just selling knowledge to you, the audience. And we're going to start from the beginner level. So anybody who's listening, older audience, doesn't matter. We're going to explain how AI works, how to use it. We're not going to cut any corners here. You're going to get up and running, learn all the basics, and then pretty quickly get to some intermediate and maybe some advanced strategies, again, with a privacy and sovereignty focus every step of the way.
I think one of the biggest problems that people have is trying to sort fact from fiction about what AI is capable of and what it's actually good for. We all know that there are such things as hallucinations where the AI makes stuff up. That's more common on some tools than others. There are some things that you can do to kind of do a sanity check. And so I'm really looking forward to you sharing all of the tips and tricks and maybe some of the lesser known tools that you and Urban use to really show people how to take advantage of a technology that is out there. Other people are using it. And I'm not one of those that say you have to do this, but if you're completely avoiding it, you may be missing out on some opportunities. Urban, any other thoughts you'd like to share?
Sure. This is not a course about AI slop or how to create AI slop. The three of us here, we absolutely hate AI slop. And most of the, you know, AI hustler, it's just about more and more and more and more this and more that. But more doesn't translate to quality, and more doesn't necessarily translate to sales. We are heavily focused on what is actually what AI is good for now, mm-hmm. and not, you know, the marketing pitch. We are also, I would say we're not afraid of technology, but we don't worship it. You know, right now you have two camps in AI. You have the people who are completely scared of it and think it should be banned. And by the way, if you're in this camp, it won't happen. I mean, the cat is out of the bag. You know, it's impossible to get to a society where AI doesn't exist. But we also don't worship it, and we don't think it's going to be, you know, the new god that we should, you know, build church and worship it. That is also a totally ludicrous idea. So if you want the based, grounded view of what this can do, how it can be used in a good way, then this is absolutely the course for you. And the reason why we created this is because we frankly do not really see this being discussed anywhere else. We mainly created for our own usage, because when you look on, you know, YouTube, how to use AI, honestly, most of the people, they just create content to tell you how to use AI, and this is how they make money. Or they will sell you, you know, their own premium service or whatever else they are doing. No, we look at the tool in a critical way, in a way that makes sense, and we break it down. We will answer all the questions that you have. So yeah, I'll just say this one thing, if you want to have a bit of the fear, because, you know, everybody loves a bit of fear. There is still the discussion of the future of AI, especially with the self-hosted. And I'm sure your audience is familiar with this. If you do not control your computer, then your computer is controlled by someone else. And right now, one of the big, big topic is with all the hardware being sucked up by those big data center. And I know you did quite a few video reports on those. It means that us, the citizen, we are fighting for hardware that we cannot access. And this is also something we're going to discuss, because when I appeared and when I first discussed about this with Gabriel, and this was, years and years ago, I said, it's not a big problem. We can just run our own locally like we could with, video games, with other things. But it's not entirely true. The price of hardware is now very, very expensive. So we'll also touch on that. We are not putting, the rosy lenses and say, oh, everything is great, because it's not.
Well, I think that's one of the main pieces of feedback that I heard from people who attended the first webinar that we did a couple of months ago, that it was very practical. It's not rose-tinted glasses that everything's great and here's a silver bullet or a magic wand. It was very practical. And I really enjoyed responding to comments that people were leaving, questions that people are asking during that first webinar. And I really look forward to working with you again and participating, being active in the discussion with people. This event is coming up on July 15th. So I look forward to seeing everyone. If you want to register for this event or to get a text description of what it's all about, you can check out the registration page at ett.live. And Gabriel, would you like to close up with any final thoughts that you have?
Yeah, just a final thought for people. So if you're going to learn AI, which you should, because it is our future, it is the power behind flock cameras and everything else. So if somebody should learn AI, it is you, the individual. It may as well be us with the correct values, right? Now, things that we do with AI, we've created websites. We'll, in fact, show you how to create a website in 2 minutes with AI. We've used it to create plugins. We've used it to make video games. There's a lot of interesting self-empowering things you can do with AI. We're going to be showing this live demonstrated on the screen. There's a lot of power in that. We're going to be comparing AI models, their accuracy, their censorship. And yes, there is quite a bit of censorship in AI. We'll show you how to get around that. You will have a recording of this event. That's also something to consider if you can't make it or you want to review it. You will get a recording of the video as well. And then last thing I'll say is it can be used as a privacy tool as well. Actually, we're going to show you how to hide your text fingerprint using AI, how to create an alias using AI. So there's a lot of actually privacy-related things you can do with AI. And of course, this is a great way to support John and his channel.
Well, that website again to learn more about the webinar or to register, it is ett.live. And I look forward to seeing everyone there who's interested in learning how to use AI to be more productive and expand their capabilities. Thank you for watching.